All right, let's hit the field.
All right.
Just wanted to talk, that's all.
The 2024 Major League Baseball season is here.
Thank God.
And the Yankees, with their $300 million payroll, begin the march towards the Canyon of Heroes in early November. But do they have enough to get there? Tonight, we'll talk about the Yankees' chances and storylines surrounding the team, plus the rest of the Major League Baseball landscape with Scott Braun of Foul Territory. It is the 2024 season kickoff, and this is NYY Recaps.
Welcome to Yankee Stadium.
Just when they thought I was out,
they pull me back in.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to everybody in the chat. Joining me tonight is my co-host from another coast, Mr. Terrence Kemp, part-time podcaster, part-time actor, full-time turtleneck enthusiast, and also joining us to talk a little bit of baseball, Scott Braun from Foul Territory. Scott, 1 year of podcasting in the books. How was it?
It was incredible. I also would like to announce that I am the latest member of NYY Recaps.
I see that. All right.
I know. Okay. Hey, just that alone speaks to how my language has changed. My lingo has changed. I feel free talking about whatever's going on in the game completely openly and authentically. And then our friend group just keeps increasing. We announced Jonathan Papelbon as the newest member of FT, Trevor May, new shows like Dodgers territory and Fair territory expanded with my good friend Alana Rizzo joining the FT fam. So times are rolling right now. I'm loving the way that baseball is moving to the digital sphere, Derek. And I'm sure you are too, as someone that's been early in on this action.
Dude, this has been fun. This is year number five for me podcasting. I'm getting a little bit of feedback from your audio, Scott. So if you have headphones, that'd be awesome to pop it in. I'm going to let Terrence take it with question number one. Terrence, what you got?
So, Scott, thanks for joining us, first of all. But recently, in the last day or so, the Yankees made a trade. They acquired John Birdie. They gave up Ben Wortfett, who is getting sent to Detroit, I believe, in a three-team deal.
Rays.
Guy that we acquired in the minute. Oh, Rays, excuse
Rays.
Me. So they acquired him. They sent him. I think, myself, it's a good move. Nice utility, depth piece. What do you think about it?
First off, better?
Yes.
How's this sound? Yes. Am I sounding good better right now? Okay, awesome.
You're
all right, we did the quick switch to the AirPods. Okay. For me, for the Yanks, it's a nice move, but it's also a little bit of a panic mode move because you don't love to see an addition the day before opening day. It usually means there's a problem and there's a hole that needs to be patched up, right? So maybe there's a little more concern about DJ. And also, it is just nice depth to have on that roster. He can play a number of positions. The dude stole over 40 bags 2 years ago. I know last year he wasn't as active on the base paths, but I'm an OPS plus guy. He was a little above league average. So, Terrence, to answer your question, I think it was fine. I don't know a ton about what they gave up, but I do think that it wasn't one of the top end guys, nothing close to it. They need to focus on putting together wins right away to start the year because of how competitive that division is. And I think most people are looking at the AL East right now and thinking the Orioles are ahead of the Yanks. So they can't afford to have someone in DJ's spot for now that they feel like is going to be a weak spot. Birdie's going to be a pain in the ass on the base path. So at least you'll get a week and a half of panic for the pitchers on the other side on the base path. So I like it. It's fine.
294
yeah,
average.
294, exactly. I was about to say. So
294 average. Well. Yeah. So let's start things off with a little bit of a projection here. So Baseball America is projecting the Yankees to win 71 games. That system's kind of wonky and unscientific. Baseball Prospectus has them at 92 wins. And then Stratomatic released their projections today, 99 wins. So if you're Ipe, Shohei's translator, which one would you bet the $4.5 million on being the closest?
Wait, hold on. We love Baseball America. That's Baseball Reference.
Baseball Reference.
And I've actually heard, I saw a lot of the Yankees writers putting it out there. And then I did some digging and it sounds like it's not the projection model that people think it is. It's like some type of autopilot projection model that they
right,
don't really
wonky.
Use.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonky. So it wasn't something that they're saying with their chest. It's not what like FanGraphs puts out there. So I'm not going to go with 70 some odd wins for the Yanks. I think they'll be better than that. But at the same time, Derek, last year, the starting staff was Gerrit Cole and then pray for rain, and I'm really nervous about everyone else. I don't feel that much better yet. I think that one of the question marks, maybe two, will hit, but all of them, chances are pretty slim. So I'm still concerned. I don't think they're going to win the division. I think that they're going to be in wild card contention, and I think they'll probably grab a wild card spot. That's where I have them put right now. Right now, I have the division for the Orioles. I actually think there's a chance the Orioles can clear this division by 7 or 8 games, maybe more. And then I think that there's the next tier of the Yankees, the Rays, and the Blue Jays together. And then the Red Sox are down in the cellar. They're full throttle for 2026.
It's weird that the projection systems aren't very kind to the Orioles. Like, I've seen them with like 88 wins, 87 wins. I don't get it. What do you think that's coming from?
I think that's a mistake. I don't know if they're factoring in all of the young talent and how good some of that talent can be right from the jump. And also, I mean, they're going to have, what, 4 or 5 guys that get called up over the next few months that make a major impact, including Jackson Holliday. But also don't sleep on Kobe Mayo for them. It's the top farm system in baseball. And Derek, I don't think that the computer projections are putting those players into the mix like they should. And it happened last year, right?
Right.
We had a debut for the Orioles every other week. And it wasn't a debut like, oh, this guy's filler. This guy's the end of the bench. This guy's the last guy in the bullpen. No, it was like, this prospect is going to be a starting player who's capable of being an all-star between now and the next few years. And there's more on the way. So I think that's why they're being shorted. The one problem point I could see for them is actually not the rotation. I think the bullpen, just because they vary so much from year to year. And Felix Bautista was the top reliever in the sport last year. He's gone. Craig Kimbrell, towards the end of his career, not as good. So I think they might lose a few wins there. But still, I think they're make up for it with their young players getting a little older and some of their prospects on the way. So I think they're an easy 100-win team.
All right. Terrence, what you got?
Yeah, so you mentioned this a little bit before, kind of touched on it. But how concerned do you think Yankee fans should be about Cole? Obviously, your ace being shut down for a sore elbow that's barking is definitely not something you want to hear, and it's concerning. But there's no tear in the UCL. We do know this. Dr. Neil Ellitrotch looked at him. Is this something you think he'll be able to get over and be Gerrit Cole in the second half of the season? Or could this be a nightmare scenario? He has 3 starts after the All-Star break, starts hurting again. He needs Tommy John. He's out for next year as well.
I think there's a scenario even worse than that. He never even gets a start, right? He's working his way back on the rest, then the rehab, and then he's not feeling good enough to go. So I feel like we've seen this too often. It usually doesn't end with a positive result. The Yankees actually had one of the better results we've seen from these elbow issues in the past decade or so. Masahiro Tanaka pitching with the partially torn UCL for basically his whole MLB career. So unfortunately, if I had to make a prediction, I feel like I'm being a little too negative on the Yanks in general. I feel like Garrett's going to have some more bad news before we get good news. I hope not. I think he's either – it's one or two things. He's either in trouble and we don't see him for the year, right? And he's got to get surgery of some sort. Or he's back and you're like, okay, he's fine. The rest in the rehab worked, whatever else they did in the meantime. I don't see much of a middle result where you're like, eh, he's not quite right.
Yeah, there's That's a couple so scary, of things. Man. Yeah, there's a couple of things that I think about when I think about these elbow injuries. One, we're not doctors. So, you know, if the advice from all these doctors is rest and rehab, we just have to trust that because I didn't go to medical school. You know, I feel like if he comes back and he gives up a run in the first inning, every Yankees fan's going to be like, oh, he should have had the fucking surgery. You know what I mean? But and that's exactly what they're going to say. But we're not doctors. We don't know. And the other thing that does concern me is it does indicate there's some measure of stress on the elbow. You don't develop edema and all these, you know, inflammation of nerves and things like that, unless there's stress on the elbow. This guy's had a lot of innings over his career. Does that stress, does he compensate for it a little bit and injure the UCL? I feel like that's a story we've read many, 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 far too many times. But also, you just mentioned it, Masahiro Tanaka, rest and rehab was the diagnosis. He rested, he rehabbed, and he pitched 6 and a half more years without any problems.
Yeah, I think we've often seen rest, rehab, PRP injection, And unfortunately, we end up getting to that bad result at the end of the tunnel. So I'm just playing the percentages game, it, just like you, Derek. I've got some family members in the medical world. I'm far from it. I'm just going off what we see in the news and what we're used to in the modern world of, you know, surgeries that we see in elbow care. So I feel like they've still been pretty secretive about it in general. We don't know a ton of details, but I haven't seen this turn out well very frequently. So I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned too. There's another guy I'm concerned about, and that's Carlos Rodon, 6.85 ERA last year. If you look at the StatCast metrics this spring, they were average to below average, even though he had a couple of good starts, and he also had a couple of clunkers. Juan Soto, first year. Marcus Stroman, first year with the Yankees on thin ice. If you could wave a magic wand and get one of these guys off to a good start, just get off to a good start. We don't want Soto to hear the boos. We don't want Rodon to start thinking about the 6.85 touchdown ERA last year. And we don't want, you know, Stroman to start having fights on Twitter with Terrence. So, you know, who are you waving the magic wand on to make sure they get off to a good start?
Terrence, are you like that? Would you do that if Stroh's struggling early on?
No, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he'll figure it out. But if he comes at me, I'm not gonna let him just come at me and not retaliate. I mean,
yeah, you gotta flex those Twitter muscles.
Yeah, within reason, right? I mean, I can be a Cheeto dust troll in the basement and just tweet out some stuff and X out some stuff and just say that, you know, you need to get it together.
Do you even have a Twitter? Answer.
Yeah, I have a Twitter. I have like 5 followers, but like I just use it to get my information.
If you and Stroh have beef, you'll have a lot more than 5 followers. But yeah. I think it's an easy answer though for you guys. I think it's Carlos Rodon. I think it's not even close. He needs to start out well. He was the big ticket item for them 2 years ago. That was probably the prime disaster out of the rotation. I know Severino struggled a ton too, but when you spend that kind of coin on a player who had been successful in a short stint, it was what, about a year and a half where he was really thriving with San Francisco, that is not the end result that you want to see. There were some issues, you know, with the coaches, with the fans, all of that. He's a good dude. I think he was just beyond frustrated. New York can eat you up. I'm from the tri-state area. I get it. So he is the guy that needs to start out hot in my mind, because the question marks are not just about how he can handle New York. The question mark is about his arm and his health. Is he the same guy? I'm not sure. Right? Like we're talking about Gerrit Cole earlier and saying if he is back and he's fine, he's going to be Gerrit Cole. The problem with Rodon is I'm like, is he okay? He's kind of just pitching hurt. Is his stuff declining already? In spring training, I still didn't answer any questions. I wasn't completely negative, but I still feel like I have no idea what we're going to get from him. If Stroman struggles, he's dealt with plenty of adversity. He thinks everything is him against the world in a good way. That's his motivation. He pitches with a chip on his shoulder. So if he has a terrible first month, he could still have a great last 5, right? And with Soto, I just don't think we need to give him any magic pixie dust. I think he's a top 3 MVP candidate if he's on the field for the whole year. That's the pickup of the year, obviously, for the Yanks. I think he is going to be beloved there, and they will say, you better not let him leave. So he doesn't need our magic pixie dust.
So, Terrence, who are you going with as your you get a wave of magic wand? Let's say Rodon is off the board now. You got to pick from the other two. Who gets off to a better start, paves their way for a good season in April?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, I feel like you got to say Stroman because just the pitching is a need on this team. And as Scott mentioned, I have every confidence that Juan Soto is going to be Juan Soto. Like, he's a great player. I think he could roll his helmet out there and be great. But Yankee fans have a tendency to get on guys, especially when they're new. They're not homegrown. You're newly acquired. And he goes, let's say like Stanton, he goes 0-for-5 in the home opener and he starts getting booed. Yankee fans, we want to re-sign this guy. We want him to like being a Yankee. So let's keep that in mind. You know, baseball's hard. He's got big expectations. I get it. But I mean, you know, guys, let's after 0-for-5 the first game, if that's the case, let's please not boo the guy. All right. You know, yes. Give him some time a little bit.
Give him a little bit of an adjustment. Leash. I just want an adjustment period. You know, it's cold. The guy is not from up north. You know what I mean? Let's let him adjust to the cold weather. And
ideal when he hits bombs in the playoffs, everyone's going to love him. So just be patient. All right.
Ideal situation, though, he goes 4-for-4 with a walk and a home run on opening day.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 1-for-1 with 4 walks.
There we go.
Be as patient with Juan Soto as Juan Soto is patient with the plate with pitches that are coming his way, with everything in life. Yes, I agree.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of trade deadline. Terrence, I know you had some thoughts on this.
Yeah, so Scott, just to hear your thoughts on which teams, if they fall out of it, have players that could be made available at the deadline. So a possible follow-up of that, you know, just, you know, has the extra wildcard teams kind of killed the trade deadline? Last season, it wasn't as exciting as I remember. I think multiple teams now feel like they're in the race just because of the multiple spots. And did Scott Boras totally kill the winter meetings? Because he totally misplayed this market with his clients. I mean, Jordan Montgomery, $25 million with a vesting option to the Diamondbacks. Okay, that's kind of nothing right there. You know, the best two times for transactions in baseball, I feel like they weren't really as much of a thing, you know, the last two times around.
The wild card and meticulous number obsession is killing the trade deadline and parts of the offseason, in my opinion. I mean, Derek knows where I stand here, but I think so many teams having a chance actually makes it much more difficult to pull off a deal because there aren't that many teams that are truly out of it. I'm for the wild card. I like having more teams involved. I'm going to place most of the blame on GMs that are obsessed with placing numbers on players and saying, we need to win this deal, whether it's for money or for prospects. I spoke about this on Foul Territory today. There is an obsession with that, right? They want to be able to go to their boss and say, hey, this dude's worth 30. We got him for 20. That is like their ultimate win. That for them is often more of a win than actually winning, which is a problem in my mind. And I'm not going all anti-analytics. I hosted shows that were all about analytics and a deep dive into numbers. I'm a huge fan of them. I refer to them probably more so on Foul Territory than any of our other hosts do. But at the same time, I think we've just gotten into a weird place where the game went from trade deadline or really even winter meetings, right? Where it's a bunch of GMs getting drunk at the bar and swinging deals. And now it's like obsession and we will wait it out so that we get the best price. And if we lose the player, we don't even care. That part pisses me off, right? If you're a team that's going for it, like where is everyone on Jordan Montgomery? There were some places he didn't want to go to. Okay. But where is everyone? They let him get to this, right? I mean, they let him get to this point though. Like, are we not going to have regret at some point from like 10 teams in the league that would have said, damn, we could have used this guy? You know who had that regret last year? The Arizona Diamondbacks. Mike Hazen publicly stated that his biggest regret in a long time was not just giving up what was necessary to trade for Jordan Montgomery. And if he did, he felt like they would have won the World Series. And Monty handed it to the Diamondbacks. So yes, that might have happened.
That's a great question because, and we still got to get back to who could be available if there's a trade deadline this year. But if you swap Monty to the Diamondbacks last year, do you think they win the title? Because I've heard people say, well, Monty's a number three at best. He's not a difference maker. He is sure as hell a difference maker last year in the playoffs.
Yeah, he was a stud. I mean, that's why you mortgage some of your future to acquire someone like that. To answer your question, I would say at least go seven games. Monty was kind of the swing man in a lot of places. Do the Rangers make the World Series without Jordan Montgomery? I think you could even make a case. Maybe they fall short somewhere else there too. So I think it's certainly possible. And that's why they picked him up. The best way to get over your regret is to buy him for the next season when you think your team's just as good. So yeah, I just would love to see Terrence more aggressiveness from some teams. I do think so many teams being involved holds it back. Last year, the Cubs were back and forth. They ended up saying, screw it. We'll just kind of keep our guys. Cody Bellinger would have been a nice pickup for a team like the Yanks and many others in the second half of the year. They didn't want to trade him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's so frustrating. But, you know, it's hard to say now what teams will be out of it, what players will be available. I mentioned in the previous show, a guy I love coming out of the bullpen is Emmanuel Clase. With Cleveland. If you look back at that deal, by the way, they sent Corey Kluber to Texas for Class A for straight up one-on-one, each player going to the respective teams. And I think Corey Kluber ended up pitching like one game for the Rangers. So what a trade that was for Cleveland. But he's a guy who I think would be a perfect fit on this team. But what kind of package do you think? I mean, are the Cleveland Guardians going to just go give us Spencer Jones, which is absolutely not happening, by the way. I'm not doing that. But are they going to go nuts like that and ask for the world? Or is he a guy that you think you could acquire for sort of a reasonable price and prospects?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a tough ask because he's got so many years left of control. He's on an extension. I'll have to look up what the exact numbers are, but he's a cheap closer. That's
$3 million
per
year.
What?
$3 million per year.
Come on.
Yeah, nothing.
It's a massive bargain. He's going to cost a lot. I think if you're the Yanks and you're depending on what you need at the trade deadline, but if it's bullpen help, that's actually usually the easiest place to find help. So I would rather pick on guys that are, you know, a year away from free agency and just give up less versus Class A. Class A for me is more of an off-season move. If it's during the season, they're going to make you give up a lot. I mean, depending on where their starting staff is at, Shane Bieber might actually be the spot to target with Cleveland, right? If the Yankees need a starter, this is a guy who's going to hit free agency. He kind of peaked already and then came back down. He's dealt with some injuries. His stuff has been down, velocity down. One of those, he went to driveline, guys. So what I saw in spring training looked really good and looked better than what we'd seen stuff-wise. We'll see if it plays out that way. But I think that's a guy that Yanks fans should think about if they're going to pick on the Guardians, who did absolutely nothing this offseason. They'll hang around because their pitching's good, but their offense is terrible. So I think they would be sellers at the deadline.
I like it, Shane Bieber.
Connection too.
Yeah.
The Matt Blake Cleveland connection. Usually Cleveland guys, you know, he's familiar with them. There's a connection there.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like it. I like it. I'm all in favor of it. Any pitching we can add. I do feel like nobody is talking about Jason Dominguez. You know, he's obviously hurt. You know, Scott, that I wear this Martian hoodie about every single day. I am obsessed with the guy. I think he's going to be amazing. Four home runs in his first seven games as a 20-year-old. And when he was a teenager, you know, he was compared to, you know, Mike Trout, Mickey Mantle. And then statistically as a 20-year-old, he was doing things in his first week that only Trout and Mantle had done. So my question is, did some kind of, you know, neutron amnesia bomb go off that just blanked out this guy from mainstream media, from mainstream baseball coverage? Because this guy was unbelievable when he came up. What did you see from him? And do you think he's legit?
You know, I was going to do the dot, dot, dot. Nobody's talked to him about him. Dot, dot, dot.
Well, I mean, you got
recaps. You're all over it.
I did, and I posted videos whenever Foul Territory would talk about it to try and raise the conversation a little bit. But I feel like he didn't get any coverage. I mean, MLB Network didn't talk about him. ESPN didn't talk about him. Shock. This guy was unreal.
And usually those spots get criticized for only talking about the same few teams, right?
Right.
And the Yankees are one of them. And he's such an exciting prospect, toolsy, that could be a superstar in the league. The upside's super high. Oh, Derek, I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge Jason Dominguez fan. I don't think he's hyped enough either. And now you're just not hearing about him because of the injury, right? People forget about players until they come back. But in my mind, he's the starting center fielder for the Yankees in the second half of the season if he's feeling good. I know he'll be back earlier, but they'll kind of mix him in. They might put him down in the minor leagues to just crush, you know, minor league pitching for a month and make sure he's good to go. But my prediction is second half of the season, he's starting in center field. I think they're going to have to reconfigure themselves a little bit. I don't like Judge. I've been very strong about this in center field at all. I don't want to see him there at all. Aaron Judge is an elite right fielder. Let's keep him there. Center fielders in baseball right now get so beat up. There are so many names of top talents that are way smaller than Judge and that have been through it. You know, the Byron Buxtons of the world. And there are many, many others. So I like Dominguez in center. And yeah, if they end up having a problem like too many good outfielders, then you'll trade one. Let's deal with that problem, Yankee fans, okay?
Cross that bridge when we get there. I 100% agree. But there is one outfielder that we got to talk about. Terrence, maybe you could take this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So people need to remember. So Yankees have quite a few free agents this season. They got Torres coming off the books. Rizzo's going to be gone, possibly Verdugo. Obviously, the big one, Juan Soto. How confident are you that the Yankees can and will re-sign him? And how worried should Yankee fans be about the team across town in the Mets being having a lot of money to spend with Verlander and Scherzer coming off their books and Steve Cohen trying to make a splash after they have their young players have a season under their belt?
Yankee fans shouldn't be worried, and the Yankees shouldn't be worried, because if they match the money, he's going to be a Yankee. As long as the year works out well, right? I mean, usually you bring in a player like this, you want him to get comfortable with how things operate. The Yankees are a first-class operation. I mean, usually when a player goes over there, if he plays well, you fall in love. You're like, this is how it's supposed to be. You know, it's a very different organization from the Washington Nationals and even the San Diego Padres and Robinson Cano's his favorite player growing up. So I think they'll be showing him these highlights, except regular season style, and say, hey, we'll match the money. So we're good to go. The Yankees are used to letting guys go to free agency, right? You go on the Judge plan like this, and then they know how to keep the guys that they want to keep, but it's a money game. So yeah, the Mets might push them, but at the end of the day, if the Mets offer $490 million, the Yankees should say, cool, we get it. You're worth that. That's what the market says. we match that. Will they do that? I don't know, right? I mean, why didn't the Yankees pick up one more starter? Why didn't the Yankees get Snell or Montgomery? It's basically a one-year contract because they have to pay more than double on all of those extra players. So this Steinbrenner group's not like George. It's not like, hey, we don't care what's going on here. They do want to make a certain margin. This is a very profitable franchise. George used to run it. Now it's the family afterwards with many people getting checks. It's like a lot of mouths to feed to get their millions. That's why you see a team that doesn't go above and beyond. They're in the top five range pretty much at all times. But you remember there used to be a time when it was like, oh, well, the Yankees are going to be in another stratosphere. So they'll get whoever they want. Those days are over. But the point is, I think the Yankees can match whatever's thrown out there. And if they do, then Soto's going to choose New York.
I just thought of a follow-up question to that as well. What would that mean for Stanton, you think? Because ideally, if you're signing Soto to a long-term deal, he's your DH, especially with Dominguez and Jones coming up through the system. And like you said, putting Judge back in right field. So I guess you put Jones in left, Dominguez in center, Judge in right. Soto's your DH. So if Stanton has another terrible year like he did last year, are you eating those 3 years of that contract? I mean, that is a big problem area. It sucks up a lot of the payroll as well.
Kindly, who cares? That's how it should be, right?
Right.
Kindly, yeah. Who cares? Because, like, for example, this year, if Giancarlo is terrible again, like, at some point, you have to make a decision there and just say, we're going to have to cut bait with the money, right? So, and if he's great or even above average, then you'll worry about it. Maybe you can trade him and eat a good amount of the contract, or maybe he's a fourth or fifth outfielder in DH bat and just depth for you. At that point, you can't worry about him. You can't let him bring the whole franchise down just because he's there. I mean, I know he's expensive, but in Yankee terms, he's not that crazy expensive. So if it's more of a roster problem, you do whatever's best for the roster. So I don't think they'll be too concerned about it. I mean, that's the dream outfield that you want out there. I do agree. Soto long-term's a DH. Definitely shouldn't be at that point yet, but yeah, long-term, I mean, he's not a great defender. I think Yankee fans will probably see that. You hope that he's an average defender.
All right, last thing for tonight, then we'll let you go because it's been a long day. We've got another long day tomorrow with opening day. I'm going to give you a little over-under action. You're sponsored by BetMGM, so let's pretend this is a BetMGM bet. Over-under 49.5 home runs from Aaron Judge. Reminder, he hit 37 last year, 62, of course, in 2022. Shout-out, by the way, watch my documentary, Chasing History. Summer of Judge, available now on YouTube. But 49.5 is the over-under. What you got?
I'll go over. Going to be a glass half full guy. It's probably not a bet that I would touch because I just think it all has to do with health. That's what happens with a lot of these season props like home runs, right? Because there's a good one on Trout. And I'm like, if Trout plays, he's going to hit his over. I think his number's in like the low 30s. I think Aaron Judge hits 50 plus home runs if he plays a full season. You're basically betting for that. If you think that Aaron's going to miss a month-ish worth of time, then you're taking the under. So without playing doctor, I'm just going to assume that he has a healthy season and take the over. And my biggest hope for this bet, Derek, would be that they don't play him too much in center field. I just think it leads to injuries. But if he's playing, easy over. I mean, the offense is better than it was last year and you've got Soto with you. So you can't just pick on Aaron. And even if you did, it didn't really matter much in the past when he's on the field. Even last year, when he was healthy, he was the same Judge.
Terrence, I know you're a big fan of Spencer Jones. Do you feel like Judge has kind of ushered in a new era of gigantic players? I mean, look at you got Ellie De La Cruz. You got some massive motherfuckers out there now.
James Wood.
I feel like, yeah, Judge kind of started this off.
Dude, I remember also with the high numbers. There's a lot more high numbers in the league. When Wayne Gretzky wore 99, all of a sudden the NHL started wearing high numbers. So that too. But I remember when the Yankees had Joey Gallo, their outfield with Stanton was like everyone was at least 6'5 or taller, which is funny. But yeah, I mean,
the jumbo package.
Yeah, exactly. How did that work out? But hey, we got Beater for Gallo, and he's on the opening day roster. But with Judge, I mean, I think teams like to follow trends, especially when they're success. Guy goes out there, hits 52 bombs, playing elite defense. Teams are probably like, hey, you know, maybe we should kind of get in on this. And I think as well, the main concern with Judge is how is a body like that big going to hold up over 162? And there's a weird narrative around Judge because is he injury prone? I don't really think so because injury prone to me is what Stanton is. Oh, he pulled his hamstring running to first base. Judge has had a lot of freak injuries. He got hit in the wrist. He, you know, broke his rib diving for a ball. He jammed his toe in the Dodger. Dude, oh my God, that just makes my blood boil, the fact that that wall wasn't padded. But, you know, that's another conversation.
The core, though. The core, Terrence, right? The core, the oblique, stuff like that. That's where you can get concerned with guys that are big and that are super muscular. That's the spot you keep an eye on.
Well, Scott, you're very muscular person. Do you feel like you – seriously, do you feel like you pull more muscle? I don't know if you do athletics or if you just, like, lift weights and eat steaks. But, like, you know, do you do athletic things?
I do. I mean, I'm not playing in any sports leagues or any of that anymore. But I did a lot in the past. I played high school basketball, so I don't know how great I am at commenting on this. And I have shed weight. I used to be kind of bigger. But yeah, I mean, you do pull muscles more frequently in my mind if there's a lot more muscle to pull. I do believe in that. And for me, it was the back. I would do all kinds of lifting, and then there would be certain exercises that I would do lifting wise for your back. And I would try to copy certain friends, and sometimes you'd pull your back, you know? So I felt like when I kind of got more flexible and didn't go crazy on overlifting, especially in that region, for me, that was just a problem spot. Then I was able to figure it out. That's why Giancarlo is fascinating to me, Derek, because I've been with him in spring training to do interviews like probably 3 out of the last 5 years. And I feel like it's the same story every time he comes back, and it was yoga and he's more flexible now and all of this. And you'd be like, okay, he doesn't look that different, but sure, I'll believe it. And then it was not usually the case. This year, he does look very thin. Yes. I was not with him at camp this time around, so I didn't get the whole story and workaround, but I mean, maybe this is what works for him. You know, he's a freak athlete and he just hasn't been able to keep himself on the field.
You know, every year it seems like after the season, Giancarlo posts all these pictures of himself on Instagram and he's riding a camel in front of the pyramids or flying, like hang gliding with an eagle, like in space. I don't fucking know. But like, I feel like this year he skipped all that and he just got to work, which to me, it makes me feel good. Like he's serious about this. You know, a lot of guys could just mail it in. Hey, I'm making 30 million, whatever. I feel like he actually put in the work this year, which is a good thing.
Last year.
I'm worried about the bat speed. I know, but he hits the ball hard as hell, Terrence, but the bat speed was concerning last year.
He looked good this spring.
Up to the fastball. But hey, what you're hoping with him is that you catch lightning in a bottle. Sometimes he has a week where he's like 2017 Stanton and hits like four jacks that are 120 miles an hour. So hopefully that's in October. That's what you want from him. He can be fine. He can be an average player. But when you roll around October, you want to have a Fenway Park kind of moment that he had in 2021. Where I've never seen Yankee fans that loud at Fenway Park, I think, during that home run.
So Frank Sinatra, when he was getting ready to leave a party, him and his entourage, they would look out the window and they would say, hey, it looks like it's going to rain. And we kind of have a little tradition like that here. Whenever we're getting ready to wrap things up, we play a little music. So we're going to wrap it up. Terrence, got to tell us about your painting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So if you guys notice, I got a little different setup. This is a family friend of mine, Glenn Hansen. He's a photo painting painter. And he did this painting of old Yankee Stadium. This is a printed image. Move out of the way so you guys can see it. Nice. But the funny story about it is the flags back there is the places of each team in the division. And when he took the picture, I think the Red Sox were in first place. So he switched the flags to put Yankees in first place because he's a Yankee fan and he made the flag like an inch bigger or something like that. So funny little fact right there. But it's cool. It's a cool background piece.
Appreciate it. And Scott, Foul Territory back to 1 to 3 p.m. weekdays. And randomly when there's big news at any hour of the day or night, I've learned.
Hey, Scott Boris has all his clients signing at 9:45 on a weekend. So we got to do it. But yes, we are breaking in for stuff with Ken Rosenthal. Obviously is a gem as you've gotten to work with him. So he's part of the fam too, for anything that breaks.
Yeah. So guys, go ahead and like, and subscribe. If you're new here, we'll be back with recaps after every Yankee game. Beginning tomorrow, finally, our long wait is over. They ask, you know, what do you do if you're a baseball fan during winter? Well, you stare out the window and wait for spring, and spring is here tomorrow. So
thank you.
Yes, thank you very much to Scott Braun, and I will see you tomorrow afternoon.
Thanks, Scott.